All right, so I think I'll start the questions with John Eikenberry. John, you just heard John Mearsheimer's comments. Where do you find exception?
Yes, great. Well, my old friend John and I do, I think, agree and disagree. I think we agree a little bit about the 1990s and the expansion of the order and the consequences of the order, including the rise of China and the way in which that has generated new conflicts and kind of agonistic sorts of logics that have infused the system. And we can come back to that, although I disagree with China being a spelling the end of the liberal international order. In some sense, the fact that you now have a rival modernity project, as you did in the 30s and 40s, when liberal international order thinking was really first created and pursued, you have the ingredients for sharpening the argument, which kind of order do you want? Do you want to let go of the institutions and arrangements that have been built around protecting liberal democracies and go for something else? Or do you want to come back to basics and try to recreate your coalition of democracies? But let me step back and say I think we do have a fundamental difference about the historical narrative. For me, liberal internationalism has been around for 250 years. It's taken different forms. It's been picked up by governments during the Anglo-American era in different ways, but it really was fundamentally conceived and pursued in the 1940s and afterwards. And that really, it was inside of a bipolar system, but John is wrong in thinking that that order was not a liberal order, that inside order. It was not simply an order created to wage security competition against the Soviet Union. Indeed, the order and its logic and the kind of commitments the United States was going to take to make sure that it happened were conceived at the very time the U.S. was cooperating with Stalin at the various meetings in Tehran and Yalta. But even before that, read the diaries of Mackenzie King, the Canadian Prime Minister who came to the White House during World War II and became quite friendly with FDR. And their talk about post-war order, it was liberal order thinking, and it had nothing to do with the Soviet Union. Indeed, you can argue that there were two order-building projects built after World War II. One was what John suggests: how do we keep the Red Army out of Europe? How do we wage this bipolar balance of power struggle, which was real, no question about it. But there was another imperative that the same people were struggling with, and that was prevent a return to the 1930s. And it was that thinking about how you create structures to make the world safe for democracy, to offer a counter to fascist political economy, the new order that Hitler was bringing forward and that Japan had in an imperial form. So when you look carefully, and as I have in my new book, at the liberal internationalists of the 1930s that had been burnt and wounded by the failure of Woodrow Wilson, they evolved, most of them, on both sides of the Atlantic, and they did become more realistic that we need to get our geopolitics right. But they also became more serious about the complex nature of the order they would have to build, and they believed more so than they did ever before in the 1930s and certainly in the 1940s that this liberal democratic complex would have to be built or would need to become the anchor for a larger world system. So just to conclude here, I think John's realist theory, which is elegant and wonderful in its breadth and scope, cannot, it's like a pair of glasses that don't allow you to see things. He can't see things that are very important in the Western experience that were there prior to his story, which then makes sense for his theory, waging security competition. That's what John needs to see. That's what his theory expects. But there was something else going on, and it was in many ways more profound. What was done inside the West was not simply a functional response to balance of power imperatives coming from bipolarity, but in some sense it preceded and in many ways defined what the imperatives of bipolar balancing entailed. So the causal arrows in various ways go the other direction, not only a prior set of dynamics, but the causal direction is different. So I think the message that comes out of that is that liberal order is not one thing. In fact, it's a kind of misnomer. Indeed, I don't know whether I should take credit for this, but the first scholarly use of the term liberal international order was in a paper I wrote with Dan Dudney in 1999, and the New York Times did not use the word liberal international order until 2005. So we're using a term to describe or debate what was the character of an order that the people themselves did not use that term to describe. And they used terms like free world, Western system, Pax Democratica, and other terms to define what, in some sense, didn't have a term. It didn't fit ordinary categories. So it was a complex system that was not entirely liberal. It was a liberal order in two respects. One is it had liberal features, openness, rule of law, to some extent, but it was also a liberal order in that it was an alliance of democracies, and there's nothing inherently liberal about an alliance, but that's part of the order. And those features are still with us today. It's not as liberal in the kind of more precious sense that Alex wants to use to measure whether it's with us or not, but the deep fundamentals, I would be surprised if the deep fundamentals did not continue to manifest themselves in one way or another, even in the midst of this crisis.